All right, I completely just fake started. This is recording, and it wasn't recording, but I think we're recording now. I hope we're recording now. So, welcome. happy to have you here at this latest manifestation of Ecclesia Hattiesburg. We are, of course, in week 1,000 of not meeting together in person. But I'm glad that you guys are having, we're getting a chance to join each other on Facebook Live and then afterwards on Zoom if you are interested in doing that and catching up with everybody. I'd like to take a couple of minutes at the beginning to welcome anyone who may be joining us or watching that's not normally a part of Ecclesia and just let you know that you are welcome. We're glad you're here. If when all this stuff is done and we get to see each other in person again in a safe way, if you don't have a community that you're already connected to, know that you're welcome and we're better off with you as a part of things. And so we hope that you will join us in person one day when we can be together in person again one day. We are, just to kind of give you an update, we are looking at and working on and thinking through what that might look like and how we might phase back into a in-person version of Ecclesia, even if it does involve some social distancing and probably a lack of kids programming for a while and some other things, just to try and first and foremost take care of those who are most vulnerable in this time. But we don't have an exact plan yet, but we will be letting you know more about that as time comes. So be praying and for everyone making decisions, and hopefully we will get a chance to try some new things soon. Although we will keep some version of a recorded service as well for a while, so that even if we do have a live version in a few weeks, that if you're not comfortable with it or it's not wise for you to come to that, that you'll have an opportunity to still participate in this way. So, for those of you that don't know who we are, we're just no particular denomination, a group of people who are following together and trying to figure out what it means to be church and to be the people of God in our community. And so we are in Hattiesburg, Mississippi, and we have tried to love our community well. So I'm glad to have you here. We are jumping back into the lectionary texts for this week, which just really means the lectionary is a series of texts that are assigned for each Sunday, and churches all over the world choose from those texts. And so you have churches from all over the world that are working on the same parts of the Bible on the same day. And it's I think it's a very cool thing for a unified kind of church to do. And we will be actually in the book of 1 Peter. And the big thing might be just that for those of you that have been with us is that we are not doing the Lord's Prayer for the first time in what feels like years. So we are going to go back on this lectionary track. I do want to just, before we read the text, I do want to give you a little bit about 1 Peter. For those of you who may not be real familiar with the book or haven't spent much time reading it or researching it, it is a letter, and so it is one of those parts of the New Testament that we that are in a letter form, which means we're reading kind of one side of a correspondence from Peter, or more likely in this case, someone who was a disciple of Peter, who kind of wrote in Peter's name, which is something that happened a lot back then, writing to the community, trying to encourage the community. And this is and this letter is particularly written to Christians who live in the shorthand for it would be what they call Babylon, which is another name they would use for Rome. But it's for people who have been, after their conversion, have been struggling because they are in a place where the fact that they are followers of Jesus makes them the object of persecution. Although at this point, historically thinking, it's probably not that these folks that are being written to 1 Peter are probably not being martyred at this point or killed. It's probably not as much physical violence as it is just other kinds of repercussions for not following state religion and doing things the way you're not supposed to do. And so it is a letter written to people who are trying to figure out, how do we maintain who we are in the midst of a culture and a time and a place where it's costly to do it, right? And so that's what's happening in 1 Peter. And if we had been, if we hadn't been doing a 98-part sermon series on the Lord's Prayer, we would have covered some stuff out of the first couple chapters of 1 Peter, but we're jumping back into lecture text, but we're jumping into chapter 3 midstream. But these verses are just packed with stuff, and I'll try not to keep us on here too long, but I also don't want to overlook some of the really good words that are here. And so again, we are in 1 Peter 3, 13 through 17, written to people who have a particular kind of suffering and fear and hope that comes with being an outsider because of your faith, being having some kind of cost to that idea. So 1 Peter 3, 13 through 17 is where we're going to be today. And it says this, verse 13 of 1 Peter 3. Now, who will harm you if you're eager to do what is good? But even if you do suffer for doing what is right, you are blessed. Do not fear what they fear, and do not be intimidated. But in your hearts, sanctify Christ as Lord. Always be ready to make your defenses to anyone who demands from you an accounting for the hope that is in you. Yet do it with gentleness and reverence. Keep your conscience clear, so that when you are maligned, those who abuse you for your good conduct in Christ may be put to shame. For it is better to suffer for doing good, if suffering should be God's will, than to suffer for doing evil. And so a lot of talk of suffering and all the things that come with trying to do the right thing, right? And I love this passage, and there's so much here. One of the things that I like so much about the way this is written is how, I love how it opens with this question, now who will harm you if you are eager to do good? And then immediately kind of backtracks on it a little bit, right? Like who's gonna harm you if you do good? But if you do get harmed because you do good, and then it tells you some things, right? So I think that right away the author is kind of conceding the idea, because when he asks this question, those who are first hearing it or reading it probably could have a list in hand, like I can tell you exactly who's gonna bother me for doing good, right? This happened, and we suffered this way, and we suffered that way. And so the author seems to acknowledge at least that this is true for the reader. But before we get on to how we handle suffering from doing good, let's acknowledge something again and just kind of with the setting here, which is that we live in a very different kind of time and context than the original audience for this letter. Even though a lot of times in our culture you'll hear things from Christians that talk about Christianity being under attack and we are kind of oppressed or we are suffering for being Christians. Historically speaking, and that kind of religious persecution that we've seen in human history, which has been immense and intense, we really have it really pretty good here, right? I mean, it's especially even in our part of the country. I mean, we live in what's called the Bible Belt. You can't hardly become dog catcher if you're not an upstanding member of your church. There's a lot of benefits to being a good church member here and a quote-unquote good Christian, as opposed to any kind of persecution that comes with it. Now, I know it is very hard that sometimes people say things like Happy Holidays instead of Merry Christmas. It is a heavy, heavy burden for us to bear. It is hard for us, right? What martyrs we are. But really, this is people dealing with real big consequences for them and their family to continue to follow in the faith. So take seriously what's being said here, because they're dealing with serious repercussions for these things. And then the thing that I want to kind of focus on first is this idea of who will harm you if you are doing good, and to ask us this question: how much of our suffering, how much of our suffering is really a result of our eagerness to be faithful and to do good in this world, right? How much of our suffering is a result of our commitment to doing good and to following the ways of love and the ways of Christ, right? Now, it's not impossible for that to happen, but if I'm honest with you, it is almost never the case with me, right? Most of my issues and most of whatever suffering that's coming my way in this world is not due to my humble attempts to serve and love other people. That's not what's causing it to happen, right? My suffering comes from a lot of places, Rarely it's from my sincere attempts to do good. All right, it might come from my own brokenness, it might come from other people's brokenness, it might come from creation's brokenness or just random bad things that happen. But it's not very often that I am suffering because I have chosen to do good. It happens, but not very often, right? So I want to concede off the bat that this is kind of a foreign concept to me. It doesn't happen much in my life. Then it says this, though. It says, but if you do suffer for doing what is right, you are blessed. If you suffer for doing what is right, you are blessed. And that is a really tough one. Because I found, for me, it's a whole lot easier to suffer for something dumb or stupid I've done. Generally speaking, I can handle that than it is because I've done something right and then had kind of unjust persecution for it or whatever you want to call it, right? If I'm driving in traffic and someone's in my blind spot and so I don't see them and so I pull into their lane and accidentally cut them off and they lay on the horn and I realize that I've done that and it was my fault and they may be outlandishly angry. They may be overreacting. They may be honking their horn and waving their arms and telling me I'm number one in the meanest way possible. And they may yell things at me and do things. And I'm going to be sheepishly waving and saying, sorry, I'm sorry, I'm so sorry. Because it was my fault. I did something I wasn't supposed to do. I'm contrite. I'll take my lumps. I can take that like a man. But when something happens that feels unjust to me, I'm doing what I'm supposed to do. I'm doing something good, and then I get something bad for it. I have a hard time getting past that. Just this week, I was riding my bike in my neighborhood. I mean, like a block and a half from my house. And I'm riding, and I'm doing what I'm supposed to be doing. I'm kind of in the lane of traffic I'm supposed to be in. I'm getting ready to take a left. I even did the goofy hand gesture thing you're supposed to do to indicate just in case someone had come behind me on the road. And as I was turning left, this guy pulled around me on the right, turning left at the same time, and then like intentionally cut me off and almost hit the front tire of my bike. And I gave the, what are you doing? And his window's down, and he hit his brakes, and he started yelling at me out the window, but I didn't have any rights to be on the road, and I shouldn't be on the road, and no. I mean, just letting me have it. And I was doing everything I was supposed to do, right? I was doing the right things. I was legally in the right. I was morally in the right. I was ethically in the right. This guy was, flying off the handle, and he was 100% wrong. It was an attack, right? I mean, this is a grave injustice that I suffered. And even this little thing, it was a 3-second encounter. My life, well, I guess technically my life would have been in danger if he'd cut me off any closer. But, he wasn't really trying to hurt me. He wasn't, attacking my family. He wasn't overtaxing me or making sure I didn't work or doing any of the things that could have been happening to the folks who read this letter for the first time. He cut me off and yelled at me when I was on my bike. And I spent all week thanking the Lord for the blessing that came from that blessing that was bestowed on me for suffering in that situation, right? Because I'm a really good Christian. Well, no, that's not what happened. What I did was I had revenge fantasies all week and thought, ooh, I should have said this and I would have done this and I should have produced the laws on bicycle traffic because that would show them. And I happen to know who the person is. Like, I know of the person and they own a business. I'm like, I should get a bunch of people to show up at the business and then I'll walk out and say, we'll never give you our money. Like, I have all these great revenge fantasies and thinking about and telling everybody about it because I need everyone to know what a grave injustice I've suffered, right? Even something that minor where I'm quote unquote suffering for doing the right thing, like, I can't get over it. It feels anything like anything other than a blessing for me, right? And yes, I understand this story demonstrates how privileged I am that this is the big injustice that I suffered for the week, right? But even this dumb little thing just stuck in my craw all week. I couldn't get over it. I was so angry about it, right? And here in the Greek, the word for blessing is makareos. And it's the same term that's used throughout the Beatitudes, right? Blessed are the poor, blessed are the meek, right? And this word blessing here doesn't indicate that we're having fun. It doesn't indicate that we're going to feel good about it in the moment, or it's even going to make us like emotionally happy necessarily. right? Because it doesn't feel great to be poor or hungry or weeping, and yet Jesus says, blessed are these folks. But there is a sense that when we suffer in these ways, we get something deeper and more meaningful out of it, right? We find a deeper kind of life, an abundant life, a meaning and a purpose in what otherwise we might not have that in. And as Scripture tells us, it also develops this kind of perseverance within us, right? This idea that the ability to remain consistent, to stay who we are, to stay the course, no matter what the circumstances may change around us, whether we're getting good things from it or bad things from it, or we're getting positive feedback from it, or we're suffering from it, right? I mean, this kind of blessing is what I feel like has been happening with this whole shelter in place thing. I mean, it's been a kind of suffering to an extent, right? For some people more than others. And I did love how we as a community had at least this window of time before it started to get politicized, which is just great. Where we were all kind of suffering a little bit, sacrificing a little bit together, trying to do something for the greater good, right? And again, it isn't fun all the time. It is hard at times. But I would argue that I'm personally, and this isn't everyone's experience, but I'm personally experiencing like a deeper, fuller life in the midst of this. In the midst of kind of self-restricting on behalf of those who are most vulnerable, which to me is a very Christ-like thing to do, and that we've all been trying to do. It hasn't been easy. There has been some suffering involved with it. My work has certainly suffered, and there's been times when I'm sure my kids have suffered being around me so much. But I do also, I feel blessed. It's been a blessing. I'm getting to spend more time, because I'm forced to, on the things that really do matter most to me. And I'm developing this kind of perseverance and flexibility around my life that I don't think I would otherwise have, because I wouldn't have been forced to do it. And I realize, again, that might not be the case for you, but in my case, this shelter in place thing, the bad that came from the good that we're trying to do really has been a blessing, right? But it is key to remember, again, in these passages, that it does not say that all suffering is like this. It doesn't say that all suffering is a blessing. It is suffering for doing what is right. And that is the pivotal phrase here. And we should remember that we have a working definition. We have an image, a picture of what it is to do good, to do right as followers of Christ. It's not just how I feel. It's not just what I have convinced myself is good or right. There is a standard laid out before us. There is a life in teachings and death and resurrection of Jesus that gives us a picture of what this looks like, right? And this is important because, as we talked about last week, it is very easy for us to twist in our own minds the whole world to make sure that we are the heroes and that we are good, right? As we talked about last week, those two men that gunned down Ahmaud Arbery, in their own minds, I am assuming, consider themselves heroic. There's a Facebook group that came up defending them, of course, because why wouldn't there be? And they're described as good Christian men there, right? And that's a phrase that is thrown around frequently in a lot of situations. But we do actually have a definition for Christian. We know what being like Christ is, right? We do have the life and death and teachings of Jesus to compare it to, right? Folks brandishing the AR-15s and storming the state houses are doing what is right in their mind, right? Many of them are God-fearing Christians trying to defend themselves against the tyranny that is out there that allows them to show up with guns, because, you know, that's how tyranny works. And that's fine. You can think you're right in doing that, and you can call it good, but is it good by the standards of Jesus and Christ? In fact, in this situation, Jesus very specifically says, my people, I do have a kingdom. My kingdom is not of this world. If it was of this world, then you'd see people arming themselves and storming in his, what would have been the state house there, right? But because they're not doing that, that's how you know they are my people, right? So we have some kind of measurement. We have something to look at and tell us what is truly good and Christ-like and loving, right? This isn't a complete mystery to us. We don't get it right all the time, but it's not a complete mystery to us. And this scripture in 1 Peter, we're hearing that, yes, it is a blessing when we suffer, but when we suffer for doing what is good, for doing what is right, right? And that's a little phrase, but it's got a lot of implications for this verse. So there is a blessing that comes with this. When we are committed to doing what is right, we may suffer for it, but when we suffer for it, it is a blessing. It is a thing that deepens and enriches and gives us a more abundant and eternal kind of life. And then it says this. It says, do not fear what they fear, but sanctify Christ as Lord. I know this is a very kind of religious sounding thing or whatever, but the writer reminds us that we are not afraid of the same things that everyone else is afraid of. We don't have the same kind of fears. In fact, he sets up a multiple choice here. Either you can fear like everyone, or we can, hagiazo is the Greek word there, Christ as Lord. And that's the same word that we find in the Lord's Prayer. I'm not sure if you spent any time studying the Lord's Prayer or hearing about it. I'll try and find you some resources if you haven't. But it's what is translated in the Lord's Prayer as to hallow, right? It's hallowed be your name. It's to revere. In other words, the belief that there is a God who is hallowed, a God who's above and beyond all, a God who is the creator of all things and the first mover of all creation, to believe in that Christ is Lord, casts a certain kind of light on the struggles we face here and now. And therefore, we do not fear the same things. We have a different way of looking at the world. We have different sets of values. Our choices are reordered and illuminated under Christ, who we have hallowed as Lord, right? We do not fear what they fear. Now, this is another thing that gets twisted around a lot, and I struggle with, because that kind of do not fear thing, I've heard it used a lot lately in regards to churches meeting and not doing what we're doing right now and meeting in person instead. Well, you're not supposed to fear, right? Why aren't you just trust in the Lord and go and meet together and do not fear? And I've gotten that from people, and I've had those conversations with other pastors, and I want to make something pretty clear. I'm not preaching to this stupid screen by myself in an office, which is awkward and terrible. But I'm not preaching to the stupid screen instead of your lovely faces because I'm scared or I'm fearful. I'm not wearing a mask in the store and keeping my social distance from other people because I'm afraid. And I don't think most people are doing it for that reason, right? We're doing it out of reverence for Christ, because I hallow Christ as Lord, and I'm trying to order my life by God's values and by Jesus' way of looking at the world. And Jesus very clearly teaches that restricting my own self on behalf of other people, which is what God did in the incarnation, caring for the vulnerable is of the utmost importance. It is the loving thing to do. We don't need to be afraid of our budget. We don't need to be afraid of whether or not we're being super productive or look really great to the rest of the community, or whether or not we're being inconvenienced. We're not afraid of any of those things. We are choosing to be as loving as we can in this situation, right? We aren't controlled by fear. We're governed by love. And as long as we continue to revere Christ as Lord, as long as we continue to value the same things that he values, to love and forgive and invite the same way that Christ did, then we do have nothing to fear. We definitely don't fear the same things, right? Even if we suffer, when we've hallowed Christ, even when we suffer, it's a blessing, right? Yeah, I'm talking a long time. Let's skip down to 15 and 16, and we'll close it up with this. Verses 15 and 16 again say, always be ready to make your defense to anyone who demands from you an accounting for the hope that is in you, yet do it with gentleness and reverence. And this is I love these couple of verses, and this is a great way to kind of end our talk tonight. But what is most poignant about those who are eager to do good, who have hallowed Christ as Lord, is how questionable their behavior gets to the status quo, It's how strange they look to the world as it normally works, right? And so they look strange, they become questionable, and then the way they respond to that questioning, these are very important aspects of all of this, right? We talked about this verse a lot in the church I grew up in, but we talked about it in regards to getting out there and defending our faith. And what we meant was we took classes to learn how to win arguments about why we were right and others were wrong. We talked about how to turn conversations towards the things we wanted them to be turned to so that we could then defend the faith. We talked about defending our faith and defending ourselves, but the truth is we weren't talking about defense. We were talking about offense, right? We weren't talking about responding to something. We were talking about getting out there and creating these kind of conversations. And I'm not saying there's anything inherently wrong with that. But the underlying premise of this verse, and I think this is very important, the underlying premise of this verse is that we are doing something so out of the ordinary that it demands a defense. That we are doing something that is so questionable to the world at large that they want an accounting of why we are doing what we are doing, right? Whereas I was trained to basically try and answer a question no one was asking, this verse indicates that I am living in such a way that I am going to be called upon to answer for what's going on. And perhaps the most difficult part of today's scripture is the underlying indictment of the fact that for me personally, there's very little in my life that demands that kind of explanation, right? I mean, how many times has someone really grilled you about the hope you possess? It hasn't happened to me much, right? It really hasn't. I wish I could say that it happens all the time, but it doesn't, right? So maybe the first thing to consider as we think about this final couple of verses here, maybe the first thing to consider is how have we become so fully integrated into this world and business as usual that we have lost our weirdness, right? This original audience was doing things like sharing their wealth. Jews and Greeks were meeting together. And slaves and former slave owners were sharing a table together. They were doing all kinds of things that made everyone around them go, what is wrong with you? Why would you do something like this, right? They were weird. They were suspect. They were peculiar. They were questionable for all the right reasons. And I'm not sure that we really are so much anymore. And I say we, right? We're so thoroughly integrated into the world as it operates that we do very, very seldom do we do things that make people scratch their heads and want to know what's going on. And that should probably bother us, right? But if we get into that situation, if we actually are questioned, if someone does call into question why we are doing these strange things that we are doing, which are attempts to be good and loving and do things that are right in light of Christ, if we are questioned about the radical good we attempt, we have one posture in our response, according to these passages, and that is humility, right? Gentleness, reverence in our response. And this is hard and almost nearly impossible. It's another difficult thing, right? I mean, I don't know about you. I try to stay off the comment sections and social media. For this very reason, right? Because for me, social media is where gentleness and reverence go to die. I'm a smart aleck by nature, and social media just prods that. And there's so much low-hanging fruit, and there's this relative anonymity, and I just need to stay away from it for the most part because I have a hard time responding to any question on there with gentleness and reverence, right? This week, I fired off something and then immediately was like, oh, and I had to delete it and apologize to the person that I responded to. And luckily, they're very gracious about it. It's hard. It's hard to do for me. But I think it's important in what we see here in 1 Peter is that the spirit of my engagement, right? The spirit I have when I engage with someone who I may be disagreeing with or maybe questioning why I'm doing what I'm doing, the spirit of my engagement is as important as its content. If it's not bathed in gentleness and reverence. In this case, the medium is the message, right? Man, there's so much more I want to say about this. I've been talking too long already. Let me just do this. Let me encourage you this week, pull out your Bibles and read through 1 Peter. There's some difficult stuff in there, some very, you know, strongly cultural things about, you know, gender roles and all that you'll probably struggle with, and I encourage you to engage. And if you have any questions about it or you want to engage on some deeper level, let me know. But take some time to look at this letter that is intended to encourage those who live in a place where having faith is costly. And let that open up some questions in your own hearts and minds. And again, I've talked too long. Take some time to look through that yourself. And I think we'll spend one more week in 1 Peter. There's a lot more I can say about this passage. Let me close in, I guess, a benediction of sorts, right? As we enter into this week, in this very backwards, upside down world right now, may you be eager to do what is good and blessed by whatever suffering may result. May you not fear what everyone else fears, for you have set aside Christ as your Lord. May you be so strangely kind and weirdly gracious and peculiarly loving as to warrant many a question this week. And may every question be an opportunity to cover those in front of you with God's own gentleness and reverence. Peace be with you.